Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to Pit Pass Moto, the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. I'm Dave Sulecki.
And I'm Dale Spangler. This week we have television, film, and video producer Todd Huffman. This week's weekend watch is the MXGP finale at Mantova, Italy, also called the Città di Mantova. Final round of the MXGP. Dave, it couldn't have been any crazier, this race. Wow. The action was insane. I was on the edge of my seat. I felt like the entire time, I think my heart rate was through the roof, even though I was sitting on my couch watching the race. I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, it couldn't have been any better finale for this MXGP class.
Yeah, I thought so too. And honestly, a lot of emotion came out of that race, I think, for Herlings, who swept the event for the championship. I mean, that alone, I think, was amazing. Him and Fabra coming into that final moto tied in points. I mean, you're talking about a series of 18 races that came down to one moto. The other emotional part was Cairoli. His final GP, does it in Italy, and the man is retired. So just a lot to talk about, a lot of emotion, a lot of action on the track. But Herlings, I think, is the big story. The young man who's always kind of really put his heart into racing and ridden probably harder than he needed to most times, and usually paid for it, unfortunately. But this season was able to hold it together. Didn't look like he tried to dominate every event like he'd had in the past. He nurtured that into what I'd say is one of his strongest championships, for sure.
Yeah, I would say, you know, Herlings this year, I felt like we saw a more mature Herlings. Like you said, instead of going for the win every single time, you know, he kind of did what he had to do. He clawed his way back from a points deficit to take it to the final moto. You know, we saw in the first moto where Febra was able to grab second place, but that brought them into the final moto tied exactly on the same points, and winner takes all. And, you know, Herlings really kind of put a stamp of authority on the championship with a 1-1 sweep and, you know, did it strongly. So congrats to them and the whole team. On the MX2 side, I'd noticed, kind of as you predicted, Dave, Yamaha seemed to really try and put Jago Geertz up front, and his 1-2 finish was able to give him the win. And as a result, 1-2 Yamaha finish with Maxime Renault, the world champion, and Jago Geertz in second place.
Yeah, how about that? I was really impressed with Geertz's ride. Sad day for Vial. I mean, he got hurt in the first moto and scored no points on the day. So he really can get to battle with the guy for second. But to see Geertz ride the way he did, win a moto, and just ride strong all day, didn't necessarily really need any help from Renault. But good on Yamaha, because they did get the Manufacturers Championship for MX2. So just check another box for Yamaha this season, who's dominated all forms of racing. Full credit to them and their team.
Yeah, one other great ride of note was young upstart Kai DeWolf got his first MX2 podium and for the Rockstar Husqvarna team. And speaking of that team, I also noticed that there's a recent signing of Roan van de Moosdijk has signed with Rockstar Husqvarna for the 2022 and 23 seasons alongside DeWolf. So they'll have a pretty strong and young team coming into the 2022 series.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The two Dutch riders teaming up together, probably closing up some logistics for the team also. But they've always come on strong. They've had some decent finishes this year, but it's good to see both those guys be on white bikes for next year, man. That's cool.
Absolutely. I can't even imagine if this year's, you know, series is any indication of how things are going to be going into 2022. It's just going to be another incredible series. Like you said, you know, we are going to lose a few with Antonio Cairoli moving on. I think Sean Simpson as well. A few of, you know, the veterans from the MXGP class will be moving on or retiring. And so, but yeah, plenty of young talent coming up. And so both classes are going to be pretty stacked going into next year.
This week's Industry Spotlight, we want to talk about bike life. It's somewhat of a controversial subject. It's the growing and challenged trend of inner-city motorcycle culture. More recently, we are seeing many articles, observations, and a lot of discussion about people riding off-road vehicles in the inner city, and the impact of this activity varies, you know, between riders that are enthusiasts to dangerous traffic encounters and even damage and injuries.
Yeah, it's an interesting subject. You know, I've been reading a little bit about this, and one of the biggest points that stood out to me is the bike life culture really is similar to surfing, skateboarding, hot rod, any of these other subcultures where, you know, teenagers bond over bike skills and camaraderie. So yeah, I think it's pretty interesting. It might have some negative repercussions attached to it, but there's a lot of positive as well with this similarities between, you know, bike life and the skateboard culture.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and it's hard to ignore what's going on. And you know, we got to wonder as an industry what the impact can be as things continue to grow, and what should the power sports industry be doing to acknowledge and help guide municipalities to harness the bike life movement.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting the outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.
This week's moment in moto history, we want to talk about the Elsinore Grand Prix dirt bike race that took place in and around the Lake Elsinore area of California. The annual event was held in mid-November, and it was very popular back in its day in the 60s and 70s, and was actually featured in the movie On Any Sunday. Unfortunately, in the mid-70s, the event took a snag. Some bad elements of the motorcycle community started to take over the event. Therefore, the city council canceled the event and then no longer held it. Until recently, they were able to revive the series, and they do hold the event on a provisional basis, which is important because this is a huge part of the motorcycle off-road culture. Back in 1973, Honda introduced the Honda CR250 Elsinore, which was named after the event.
This week, we'd like to welcome to Pit Pass Moto, television, film, and video producer, Todd Huffman. Todd, welcome to the show. How are you today?
We are good out here in extremely sunny Southern California, so it's good.
Awesome. Well, you've had a pretty busy year between the Carlsbad Monument Project, the 50th anniversary re-release of Bruce Brown's On Any Sunday, and I even saw where you threw in there for a little extra fun, 40 years since the America's first win at the 1981 Trophy in Motocross the Nation celebration at the Moto Dofa Winery. How are you getting all this stuff done? How you finding all the time to create these projects?
Yeah, you know, I don't know actually, you know, I have a BMX career in the past, and we also put on a 3-day vintage BMX festival for the first time ever a month ago and up in Northern California. So I was leading on that too. So yeah, not enough me to go around this year, it seems like. So yeah, it's been a busy year so far. I can't believe it's almost December. So onward and upward towards 2022.
So Todd, your memorial at Carlsbad project, that one was very interesting to us, obviously, because of the history behind Carlsbad and the fact that you held the event on the anniversary of Marty Moats' big win there in 1980. You know, talk about some of the challenges you had to bring that to fruition, because I understand it took a few years to kindly get things moving and finalize it.
Yeah, you know, well, first off, did you guys order your bricks yet?
No, not yet.
Has the Pass Moto brick been ordered yet through Road to Recovery? Okay, we'll put that on your to-do list. So
definitely.
You guys can all be part of the monument when it's finished. So, but yeah, you know, it's been 11 years so far. Actually, in October, it was 11 years formally, because in October of 2010, we kind of decided to do it at the film's DVD release party. In 2010, we said we were going to work on this monument, came up with the idea for it. So it's been 11 years. We have gone through the ups and downs of dealing with cities and private landowners and developers and attorneys and everywhere in between. So where we finally landed on the current site is perhaps a blessing in disguise. We ended up there because it's really a neat location, and there's two breweries in the parking lot, so you can't go wrong there.
Oh, wow.
Off-road riders and breweries, I think, definitely going hand in hand.
Yeah. Drag racers and everybody else in between. So
it had to be very satisfying, though. How big was the final get-together there? I mean, did you have a group of good core people there?
Yeah, you know, we had, I'm guesstimating throughout the course of the day, because it, you know, it had to be done on like a Tuesday or a Wednesday, right? Because that was the day that the 21st fell on. And I don't know, maybe 500 people. We were just talking about this the other day. We were there finishing up a video shoot that's tied into the monument. And we were talking about how many people we have there. And we're like, oh, probably 500 throughout the course of the day. And, you know, a lot of the ride people, magazine people, and a couple of moto stars, you know, Brock Glover came out, and shoot, Don the Snake Prudhomme came out and was part of our festivities and took pictures and signed autographs. And, you know, motorbikes and car clubs, the Mopar Club of San Diego brought a bunch of cars out. We had some finished dragsters. It was really cool. Fun day.
Now, is it located directly? Is it literally on the site where the former racetrack was located, or is it just kind of nearby?
It actually overlooks the site. So geographically, it's on the northeast corner of the property. And so the kind of the feature of the monument is this, it's about a 15 by 20 foot deck that kind of juts out over the canyon, and you kind of look down into the valley where the racetrack used to be. And of course, across the opposite side from the monument location is, you know, you're looking at Melrose Avenue, which is really kind of where the famed Carlsbad Freeway was on the, you know, the big uphill and the big downhill that was featured in all those USGP TV shows on ABC Wide World of Sports. So you're actually physically looking over the dirt of where the drag strip was and the road racing course for super bikers. And, you know, it's kind of, unfortunately, there's a little rise of a hill. You can't see where the starting line was for the motocross course, but it's the spirit of the place, right? Hallowed ground of motocross.
Well, Todd, in your history, you've done, you've worn a lot of hats in your industry, doing all sorts of content and directing, producing, writing of all the various formats. What, of those things, which do you enjoy most? Which one flips your happy switch the most?
Oh boy. Just sitting down, talking to people, doing the interviews, you know, it's fun when you sit, you know, you write out a whole list of questions, whether it's a half a page, one page, you know, whatever, 20 pages for a guy like John Penton, whatever. And you have your own stories, you know, the information you kind of know that you want to get out of them to talk about. But then when they tell you something completely new that you had no idea about, right? Like some new tidbit of history or whatever. It's always fun to kind of know that you pulled that out of somebody, and no one's ever heard that story before, or it wasn't, you know, publicized very much. So I really like that part of it. And I think discovering, you know, hidden archival pictures and videos and things like that out of people's collections, because, you know, that's a big part of what we do, is having people send us your stuff, you know. And you, when you see a, you know, some nugget of a still picture or a little piece of old home movies or something, that you know how it's going to make the piece that much better, you know, it's really pretty fun.
It's like finding that story.
Yeah, finding the stories. Like everybody says, hey, what do you do? You know, and I always like to say, I'm just a storyteller. I mean, yeah, we produce, we direct, I have to write some stuff, you know, but you know, just being a storyteller is the fun part.
Yeah, I read that where you said you consider yourself a storyteller, whether it's from developing documentaries to producing corporate videos. You know, every production tells a story. And so would you say that at the root level, I mean, is that what drives a lot of your projects, that it, you know, it kind of must have that sort of, I guess, pass the passion test, if you will?
Yeah, you know, I mean, anything worth asking someone to spend their time to watch, whether it's like a 30-second commercial or a minute video or some short form 10, 11 minute, 12 minute, 2 hour and 15 minute John Penn movie, whatever. You know, if you're asking someone to spend their time to watch your stuff, it should be interesting. And we try to make everything we do, you know, tell a little story, you know, and whether you're selling a somebody's life story, you know, or you're selling a product or a service or something, it make it interesting. Just try a little bit, you know. And so many times I see things online and television, movies, whatever, and it's like, man, they didn't even try. And it's just kind of heartbreaking. And sometimes I'm my own worst enemies because we don't get projects or whatever, because if you can't do it right, make it like a story, then why do it, you know? And or if there's not the budget there to do it right, you know, you don't do it. I just won't do it, you know? So
Todd, I know in our industry and in racing specifically, I'm going to talk about off-road and motocross racing, it's filled with interesting characters, I guess is the way I want to describe it. Kind of tongue in cheek, I guess, but the Motocross Files, the Motocross Files series that you worked on, you had some, what I felt were some of the icons of the sport that are very colorful characters, let's say. What was it like to work with and get information out of somebody like Bob Hanna or Rick Johnson? Were they volunteering it? Did you have to pull teeth? I mean, what was that experience like for you?
Well, you know, it's going to make a good book someday. Right, all that whole process of dealing with all those guys, and I hope it's not the end of doing them. You know, we hope that 1 year here, maybe next year, we're going to get a chance to do a season 4 of the Motocross Files. There's some unfinished stories to be told there, but over the course of doing these things, I don't know, it's been 16 years now, I guess, is when we did the first one, 2005 or 2004. Yeah, 2005, they came out actually this month, 16 years ago. You know, there's been hundreds of interviews that have gone into those things. And man, by the time guys get the age of Bob Hanna and Ricky Johnson or whatever, in their, you know, 50s, you know, there's no more, nobody has to be politically correct. There's no more sponsors to take care of or watch what you say, whatever. And so people just love to speak their mind. And all of those guys have become great, great storytellers. And I just have to kind of get them going, and they got stuff they want to say. And we just let the camera roll for the most part, you know. And God, you know, if you're going to ask me, is there a favorite, you know, it would be really tough to say who's a favorite. You know, Bob Hanna has become a close friend over the process. I've interviewed him, I don't know, half a dozen times now for various projects. And, you know, I feel I'm one of the few people that he'll let interview him now. Like, I'm kind of one of his go-to, if not the go-to guy. But everybody, you know, Danny LaPorte was amazing, and sitting with Torsten Hallman for 7 hours for his story for a 22-minute television show, right? So there's some footage to come out in the near future from a lot of these that people haven't seen yet. So we're going to do something with all this old stuff.
It's got to be fun and rewarding to be able to speak so candidly with people like Hanna and LaPorte. And like you said, how there's, you know, when they get to that age where the filter's gone, you know, and it's kind of like just tell it the way it was, and it's got to be fun stuff. So I have another question. Are there any, so you have any other projects coming down the pipeline, pun intended there, that you're excited about that you can share with our listeners?
I think so. I mean, our big project that we are really hoping, I mean, obviously On Any Sunday, the 50th, that's just, you know, more of a marketing project because I didn't make the new movie. We just, you know, retained the licensing right to do the film distribution on it because it was going to come out anyway, but put it back in the theaters in some limited capacity was fun, and it's still going ongoing, you know, and people can become a movie captain if they want, but just go to onanysunday50th.com. You can sign up to host On Any Sunday in your hometown. So it costs nothing. But beyond that, the story of the 1981 Motocross and Trophy Donations team would be our next big film project amongst other just, you know, corporate video work we're doing. So, and we hope next year to start shooting that and hope we can come out with it in 2023.
So is that building on what you did at Moto Dofo? Is that building on that, or?
It is kind of, you know, because those guys are all friends of mine that were there that day at Moto Dofo, you know, if people have not watched that Facebook Live video, it's there. Just go to the 1981 film Facebook page and you can watch it. You got to scroll through about 17 minutes in before it officially starts with Lorette Nickel hosting it. But that's the first time all six of those guys with Dave Arnold and Roger DeCoste had been in the same room together since 1981. Was that day in September? Do you think about that?
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, mainly because Johnny O'Mara had not been to some of the other Hall of Fame things that the team had been as a group been to. He didn't go, right? So Johnny was kind of the man, the missing man out on that, those other get-togethers, you know? So it was really fun to have all six of those guys on the stage together talking about those stories. I knew some of those stories, but boy, learned a ton more on top of that. And heck, nobody else was doing anything to celebrate the 40th anniversary. And, you know, I knew we had this potential movie coming up here to start working on next year. And I'm like, you know, this would be a good time to get the guys together, make people remember that what they did 40 years ago. And we get to announce the movie project because we actually have someone who wants to help us produce it from a financial standpoint. So,
well, for sure, Todd, these are awesome projects and we are definitely looking forward to seeing what comes out next. Unfortunately, our time is running short. So if there's anybody that you want to give a shout out to right now, anybody on your team or in your projects, now would be the time to do it, man.
No, I just want to say thanks to everybody who appreciates the work we do. It always sometimes feels like a thankless job telling these old motorcycle stories, and the people that either write to us or I see at events and stuff that say thanks for what you do. It's always nice to hear it. And that's it. We hope to be able to bring more stuff out to the public that likes these old, you know, dirt bike and motorcycle, anything motorsport stories. It's what we do.
Awesome. Thanks again, Todd, for spending time with us today, man. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks, you guys. Take care.
Upcoming events, we have the World Superbike of Indonesia, November 19th through the 21st, and that is the final round of that series. So, and it is coming down to the final round on that World Championship. So we look forward to that. Thank you again to our guests for being with us today, and thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. If you have a moment, please rate and review us. We really appreciate it. Make sure you're also following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit pitpassmoto.com where you can check out our blog.
This has been a production of Evergreen Podcasts. A special thank you to Tommy Boy Halverson, Chris Bishop, producer Leah Longbreak, and audio engineer Eric Coltnow.
I'm Dave Sulecki.
And I'm Dale Spangler. See you next week.
Sports stars. They're like superheroes.
But they're actually real.
Which is why we've made a podcast about them. You see,
they've all got a story.
But too many of these stories were cut short.
Kobe Bryant.
Payne Stewart.
Flo Jo.
Phil Hughes.
Justin Fashanu.
We're writing episodes about all of them.
And sadly, many more.
Death of a Sports Star. A new series from Crowd Network.